you had a pretty interesting incident in one of your books.
Yes, a case of a man and woman being involuntarily abducted in a car and all, taken aboard an alien spacecraft. They were alone when their car was abducted. It was about 11:45 at night near Matias Barbosa in Minas Gerais State in Brazil. And it was just short of midnight. They had stopped for a snack back down the road. That's why they were pretty well aware of the time that this happened. And they pulled off the side of the road because they were drowsy. And a light bloomed on above them, a bright beam of white light. And as they were trying to see through the windshield what this light was coming from, there was a whoosh. The car and was all, everything was sucked aboard that fast in this beam of light. Went right through the bottom of the craft, and a floor slid under it, and it's inside.
Just like that.
Just like that.
Now, it's interesting and about this, the people, the beings that actually explained to these people where they're from and the whole, I mean, they were pretty open, really.
Yes, they were. They told them that they came from a planet they called Clermer. They said that it was not too far from our sun in our part of the galaxy, and they showed the two abductees on a hemispherical map on a viewing screen. They showed them their sun and our sun in relationship to it and other associated suns that had intelligent life on them.
Now actually, on the cover of your book, if I'm not mistaken, that's there.
That is a reproduction of an alien map that was produced by the machine itself. The woman said, can I trace a copy of that? He said, I'll make you a copy. And he pushed a button and went back someplace and came out with a sheet of paper in his hand with the scene printed on it in color.
Yeah, one of the things that you mentioned yesterday was the fact that they spoke perfect Portuguese.
That's right. They had their own language, but when they addressed the couple, they spoke perfect Portuguese.
These beings from this planet, they were brown, is that right?
Brown-skinned, yes.
Mm-hmm. And they had interesting eyes?
They had green eyes. The iris part of the eye was green. They otherwise had black hair and a brown skin, but green eyes.
So that would, if you paid a lot of attention, that might stand out. But you mentioned in your book, I remember, the fact that on one of the later encounters, which we'll get into, the lady, I believe, well, maybe both of them. There were two people involved, right?
Two people involved, yes, man and woman.
There was somebody met them by a name of some weird name, and he was actually living here on this planet.
He was an alien man living as a resident on this planet that they used as a contact, and they sent messages through him. He clearly was of the alien society, because when they were all together, they looked alike. He was just wearing Earth clothes. He gave his name as Zer, but that was only his name in the alien society. He had another common Portuguese name in Portugal.
Now the interesting thing, and we'll maybe get into that a little bit, and I can read it in the book. This is on a later encounter. The whole idea of them transporting and levitating the car and the whole thing, and then talking to these people, and there was a man and a woman, right?
Yes, man and woman. Mm-hmm.
The whole idea is that almost everything that we hear about in fiction actually happened.
Oh, yes, very much so. In fact, the truth is so much beyond. I don't even like to read science fiction. It's just somebody's idea of an idea. I only like to read the truth, and the truth actually is more rare than anybody can imagine.
And in your research, you've come across some great stories over the years.
Fantastic! I've written 18 books.
They had some kind of helmets or something that they put on. What was that about?
Yes, they seated them in big chairs in alongside of a console that filled much of the wall. And then the aliens seated themselves in chairs facing them, so there were four people in the room. And they put helmets, silvery-looking helmets on their heads that had a blinking light on the top and blinking light around the side, some wires coming out that they plugged into the console. and the aliens put similar helmets on their heads. And after the helmets were on, they could open the conversation, and they heard the conversation in Portuguese, and their answers were translated by the console and into the alien language for the aliens. Now, the interesting thing about this is when the alien spoke to the man, the woman could hear the alien's voice speaking to the man, but she couldn't hear the translation. Her earphones weren't working when that was happening. When he turned to her, her earphones worked, and she could hear the translation in Portuguese, and she could hear his voice in his language, but the man couldn't hear the translation to her in Portuguese. He could only hear her response.
It's kind of a selective thing. They probably couldn't figure out. I guess it was automatic. I don't know.
Well, it was all done automatic by the big console. There were blinking lights on the console. She noticed that the round-colored button-like lights blinked when they talked, and when the aliens spoke, square button-like lights blinked.
What kind of craft was this?
It was a deep-domed disc.
Certainly. It was very, very large.
It was about 70 feet in diameter. There was another car in that ship when they became aware of being inside. After the light, there was total darkness. They couldn't see a thing. And then as the light slowly came on, they could see that they were sitting in a hangar-like room on a metal floor. There was another car there. And there was nothing else in the room at the beginning. Then a port opened in the ceiling, and two men came down a ladder that ran along the wall and met them. Now, this small, well, it wasn't so small, the 70-foot diameter craft went someplace else with him, where it went into another larger craft. And it was in the larger craft when they left the smaller disc-shaped craft. The larger craft had several other discs of this size, some bigger and some smaller, in another bigger hangar bay than the one that their car was in.
So it was a very large mothership.
Was also involved, yeah.
And the man who actually, took the lead investigating for the extraterrestrials actually became very friendly with those people, right?
My friend, a Varig Airlines flight captain that was doing the interviewing, became quite well acquainted with Herminio, the man. He never met the woman. So.
Never met. And now you met the woman later, or what?
No, I was looking for the woman for years, and just a couple of years ago, I found out that she was the prime contactee. The man was interested. The man, by the way, was a Jehovah's Witness minister. And when he became aware that they were aboard an alien vehicle...
Well, let's get into that story in this next break, because this is... Wendell Stevens is our guest, and Wendell, we're talking about the Jehovah's Witness man. He was very religious.
Yes, he was. He was an architect by trade, but his main activity was as the minister of the Jehovah's Witness Church, and he was a devout man. And she was an attendee at the church also. She wasn't as religious as Herminio, and as soon as he realized where he was, he subscribed to the belief advocated by many Christian churches that if they don't have a Jesus Christ, they are from the other side. So he immediately began to try, first of all, to try to exorcise the Satanists and make them go away.
Praying to Jesus.
Praying to Jesus Christ, he said, the blood of Jesus has power. Go away, be gone, Satanists. Leave me alone. I'm a simple man. I be gone.
Something like, Jesus, I beseech you. In the name of Jesus.
In the name of Jesus, be gone, yeah. And the alien sat there and let him go. Then after he failed to exorcise him, they didn't disappear.
And the alien didn't try to stop him, let him go on and on.
He just sat quietly and watched him, and then when they didn't disappear with the exorcism, he began preaching to him. He was going to convert him to Christianity. And he tried hard to make them understand, and the alien just sat there and looked at him. He did this for over a half an hour until his voice started to break from effort. He was preaching so hard that he became hoarse, and he could hardly talk. And when he reached a quiet stage, the alien looked at him and says, "Are you through?" And he says, "Of course, I can't even talk anymore." And the alien says, then carefully took all the points that he raised in trying to convert him and explained his position on those points, that he said that they didn't have a God, that the creation is so much beyond the concept of a personified God that we can't, we're pagans in the woods with our ideas. And they didn't have a Bible, and they didn't have money, and a lot of things that after listening to him for 15 or 20 minutes explaining their positions, for Herminio, the Jehovah's Witness minister, began to think about his own religion and thought, at one point, the alien mentioned that we look at our religion as a religion of love. He said, it's not really a religion of love. He said, you go to church because you're afraid of the devil. You got a victim hanging on the cross bleeding, and all kinds of, and followers are stoned to death. Is that a religion of love? And Herminio finally agreed with the alien and gave up his religion and went to teaching yoga.
Right. Yeah, you know, it's interesting that they discuss theology and religion with the extraterrestrial, and they actually took time to explain each of the points.
Yeah, and then after this careful discussion, and Herminio is blown away, he sits there silently. But when the alien finished, the alien then turned to Bianca and he says, do all these people on Earth believe like this man? She said, not all. He said, Thank goodness for that. he told her, he said, you ought to talk to him a little bit about this. He's a little rabid.
So this man, the extraterrestrial, he actually was quite communicative and in a friendly way.
Yes. Uh-huh.
And actually had a lot of respect for
them. He told Bianca, he said, I like talking to you. You make sense. This guy doesn't.
Now, Bianca actually got other messages from him later?
Yes. He asked him if she could contact him again, and he said, I'll prepare you. So he set her down in another chair, and he got a device, and he put it on her head, and he put his hands on her shoulders, stood behind her, and operated some equipment, some buttons, manipulating the device was on her head, and he said, now this is going to hurt a little, but it won't be too painful. Is that okay? And she said, go ahead, it's okay. And it did make her head resonate a little bit, like a buzzing in her head for a short time. And when he stopped it, he said, now, he said, you're programmed. He said, you will be able to receive our telepathic transmissions, and you'll be able to respond. She says, will I be able to call you? He says, well, not really, but I can call you anytime. And so after that, they communicated with her telepathically and would send her to a rendezvous point where they would come and land and pick her up.
And actually, this happened four or five times?
Seven times. I know of. There were more after that, but I have a record of seven.
Yep, seven times, and each of these things were kind of interesting. I like the story about evidently Bianca felt it was okay to contact the press. Or how did the press find out about it?
She first, when she started telling about what happened, she had no concept of UFOs at the beginning. So she began to tell a few people, and they said, oh, there's a group in Sao Paulo that studies that. And they gave her a name of somebody that had a radio program like yours. And she contacted them. They invited her to come tell her story. When she got to the house, she found that there was a half a dozen people from the organization waiting there to hear it. And they told their story, and then they all wanted to be introduced to the extraterrestrials. And so in the next contact, she said, I have a number of people who want to meet you. Is that possible? Can they meet you sometime? He says, well, he says, close personal friends, but not those people you're talking to. They're not your friends. They are exploiting you. So she said, well, can I bring friends? And he said, of course, but he said, we're going to have to do this in a less populated area. She lived in Rio de Janeiro. He said, we're going to have to do this in a remote area where there's little chance for interference. So she then went to great pains to find a piece of property many kilometers away from cities, finally arranged to buy it, built a little hut on there, sent her father out to guard the property when she was there. She worked the full work week and then take the weekends out to work on the hut on the property. It was invalided, and he could barely walk. And when the hut was nearly finished, a brilliant light appeared over the house. And it was so bright that the light came right through the ceiling all the way to the floor. Illuminated everything inside. He went out to take a look, and the object was hovering above, and then it flew away, and his debilities were completely healed. He was perfectly healthy after that. So they were very thankful for the help that was done, but he was particularly grateful. He had his doubts about UFOs and what they were doing here and that sort of thing. Up to this point, after that, he became a pretty strong advocate of them.
I could understand.
Yeah.
Now, why do you think they chose Bianca in the first place? Or was it just they were making routine investigation? I mean, I know this would be conjecture on your part, but I mean, and there was something, we identify certain people and other people we don't. Do you think something like that happened or what?
Well, I don't think so, because she had no concept of UFOs. The man that was riding, they weren't related. She was a patron in his Jehovah Witness church, not the strongest supporter, but went to church regularly, his church. And they were going, he was going on business to Belo Horizonte, and she was going to see some friends in Belo Horizonte, so they happened to be riding in the same car, and he was doing the driving. Her car, which was a little Carmen Ghia.
And Bianca, later the press actually got involved. How did that come about?
Well, when she went to see the UFO group, it was a new case and it was quite spectacular, so they immediately reported it to the press, and reporters wanted to talk to her too. And they started telling her about other cases, which interested her because she didn't know anything about any cases up to this point. So then she began to follow up on some of the names that they gave her, and finally ran into legitimate UFO investigators down there that gave her more information. And so she began signaling for Karen to come back. She wanted to ask him more questions.
And that was the name of the alien.
That was the alien said, "My name is Karen." When slapped himself on the chest, said, "I am Karen."
Now, I guess he never, you told one story about maybe he was a little late from what time they thought they'd be there, and people got tired of waiting.
Yeah, that's right. They expected to be there by 8 o'clock in the morning, and this happened about 11:45 at night, and they had another 2 or 3 hours to drive. And they never showed, the man had an appointment, and they never showed, and they were aboard the alien spacecraft for 3 days and 2 nights. Of course, all the appointments failed because nobody knew what happened to them until they got back, rested up, and then started looking around to see who else knew anything about this sort of phenomenon, because it was entirely alien to them at the beginning.
When you've written 18 books, anybody else from this planet, or is this the only incident that they say they're from this particular planet?
I've never heard of another one from this planet, and in over 100 cases, there are only two that might be coming from the same sun system and not necessarily the same planet. All the rest were different from all of the others. If my sampling is representative, that means that 98% of our visitors are all different from all the others before that. This indicates some kind of infinite intelligence and infinite variety of contact.
We're talking with Wendell Stevens.